So, good evening and welcome. My name is Andrea Rovaglio. I'm Italian, but I worked in the United States for 4 years. I was working with Bruce Eckel at the time, so maybe you remember the Thinking in Java book. And then I came back to Italy and I restarted my job as a consultant. What I do primarily is to work with large companies, like banks, insurances, and what they do is basically help them to get their projects where they should be. Basically, help them with their teams, technology, and so on, and so on, and so on. And of course, I do that in Italy and in other countries as well. I've been in Prague several times, actually. I've been in Prague, I think, at least 7 or 8 times, and I've been working with a company called Anio Technologies, which was now acquired by ICZ. So I'm in touch with ICZ right now. I didn't know that you guys were going to take this presentation, but I'm glad that someone took care of it. And so apparently you'll be able to find this session on the web sometime, somewhere, at some address. So how about you guys? You're about, we'll say, 50 people, more or less. You guys are students. How many students? Oh, not that many. Probably 30%. And who's working? I just want you to check. And I understand that the IT community and the IT market is very active in Prague right now. There's a lot of new companies and new interesting opportunities for you guys. So that's good. So let's start with the topic for today. It's called Seen Aspects in Web Application Architectures. If you have any problem with my weird English, because you know it's partially Italian, partially Californian, so it's kind of a strange mix. If you have a problem with my English, just raise your hand, let me know, interrupt me anytime, ask me questions anytime. That's absolutely not a problem. Okay? And actually, I would like to hear from you. I would like to have feedback from you. Because this topic is something that I came across working with my clients, basically. You guys know more or less what aspect-oriented programming is. And even if you don't, I'm going to tell you, okay? Just for 5 minutes. And then we'll see how we can apply the concepts of aspect-oriented programming to creating web applications. So the story is very simple. One of the most important principles that we apply in software engineering is the principle of separation of concerns. So we try to separate different issues in different ways. Usually what we try to do is we try to decide which is the primary business logic of our application, and then we decompose that application into functional units, which could be procedures, functions, if you use a procedural language, could be classes and objects and so on. So basically what we try to do is we try to isolate concerns. And we start with the most important concerns. So in this example over here, we may decide that the most important part of our application is to be able for the user to add an item to their basket. It's kind of, you know, online and shopping. So add an item, remove an item, and buy things. Okay? So these are the three most important concerns in our hypothetical web application. But the thing is that there are many other concerns which are not necessarily strictly tied to our primary decomposition. So for example, security is one. You decide that certain functions, certain functionalities are subject to user authentication. That's one thing. Transactions. You decide that every time you want to buy an item, that should be part of a transaction. Get the functional, a unit of operation. Or audit track of what's going on. And these things are not our primary composition. They become, as we say, orthogonal. They intersect our primary composition. So what I'm trying to say is, these are what we call in aspect-oriented programming cross-cutting concerns. Security is a cross-cutting concern because we need security when we add an item, when we remove an item, and then when we buy. We need security in all of these places. Okay, transactions as well as what. So what happens usually is that if you don't think in terms of aspect-oriented programming, what you do usually is you duplicate code. What you do is, into my primary functional decomposition, for example, the part where I buy an item, okay, I will introduce inside of that function, inside of that piece of code, I will introduce some code that takes care of security, some other code that takes care of transactions, and some other code that takes care of auditing. And then the same thing you would do for add item and for remove item, so on, so you duplicate code. I'm not saying that you are copying and pasting the code into all these functions. It could just be a method call, but you're still duplicating code. Because in all of these three primary functionalities, you still need to call into security, call into transactions, and so on, and so on, and so on. And of course, one of the principles that we try to apply in software engineering is the principle of don't repeat yourself. What we call the dry principle. Because every time you duplicate code, you duplicate your maintenance efforts. Okay, so everything becomes more complicated, more expensive for the company, so on and so on. So what we try to do with aspect-oriented programming is to come up with a way to reduce the amount of, or to eliminate completely the amount of code that you need to duplicate in each one of these functional compositions. Okay. This thing that I've pointed out on the screen, you know, the circle, is what we call a join point. For example, in that case, we have the buy piece of unit, unit of functionality, which intersects, in this case, the transactions. Now, that intersection we call a join point. And in aspect-oriented programming, we need a way to specify where the join points are. And the way we specify where the join points are, if you use an aspect-oriented programming language, is using what we call point cuts, which means some specific syntax that basically puts together your primary decomposition with the, what we call the add-bys, in this case, transactions. Okay? That's what we do. But the thing is, even if you wanted to do... I'm sorry. I skipped one. Even if you wanted to do that in your web application, because you decide that you would like to be able to introduce this kind of approach into your design, that's not necessarily simple to do, especially if you cannot use an aspect-oriented programming language or framework, and so on, and so on, and so on. What I have here is an example, a code example of what I was talking about. I decided to use a framework called AspectJ, which is very, very popular. Now, it's not important at this point if you don't completely know what this thing is doing. But I'd just like to point out a few things. Okay, what this example is pointing out is, let's assume that in our application, we have a class called BusinessObject. And that's where our primary business logic is implemented. Okay? So business object is where you may find the add item, remove item, and buy method. Okay? That's the primary business logic. And what we're saying here is that we want to define a new point cut. Okay? And what this syntax is saying is basically, every time there is a call to a public method of this class, the method may be anything. It may take anything, it may return anything. So basically, whenever a public method, any public method is called on business object, I want something to happen. Okay? And in this case, what's happening is it's called an advice. And the advice in this case is saying that before the log point cut, you want this thing to be printed out, and after the log point cut, you want this thing to be printed out. Which means that before and after every single call to every single public method in your business object, you will see this printout. Okay. Which means that this printout, this instruction, this advice, as we call it, is not inside the business object. The business object is just implementing the business logic. Okay? And then you can add more things. Now the thing is, this is very nice, and this is a very basic example. There are many more interesting things that you can do with aspect-oriented programming. But the thing is, if you want to be able to do something like this, you need an aspect-oriented framework. Okay? Like, for example, aspect J. And that's not necessarily possible every time. Okay? Now, since I want to point out about the code that you have just seen, first of all, it's a declarative language, or it's partially declarative. What I'm saying is, the code inside the advice, this one, this is imperative code. We are instructing the machine to do something specific. Okay? But this part, this one, all the code, all these texts that puts together our business logic with this advice, this is all declarative. Okay? I'm just declaring that I want these things to happen. And in general, using a declarative language for things that are not processes, it's a good thing. Right? We know the difference between imperative and declarative, of course. Okay. I was reading a book by Kent Beck recently, and the book is titled Implementation Patterns. And it gives a lot of good advices. And one advice is don't use an imperative language just to declare things. And you guys use Swing, for example. And have you seen code where to populate a window with all the controls and components, you need to use Java code, which, and you have something like create new button and then add button to the window and so on and so on and so on. That's a way to use an imperative language to declare something. Because what you are declaring is just saying, I want a button in this position. And using an imperative language to declare things is a bad idea, usually. Okay? If you can avoid it, that's better. Okay. So that's one thing. Declarative language is better. The other thing about the previous example is that it isolates common code. Meaning that this code here, the system out print line, you will not need to replicate in all the methods of your business object. Okay. And the last thing is it's easily configurable. If you decide that you want to change which advice is applied to which method in your business objects, you just change that code and boom, that propagates to the entire application. So the principles that I'm trying to apply here is don't repeat yourself and don't use declarative languages, don't use imperative languages to declare things. Okay. This word, whenever, is the core of this presentation. And actually, I like this effect, so let me do it again. And that's the core of this presentation. Because what we're trying to do here is we're trying to find a way that we can use to specify what happens in our web application whenever certain circumstances occur. Okay. For example, let me give you an idea. What happens with web applications? The web application of this symbol here means intersects. Okay, it's horizontal. Okay. In web applications, presentation and content are two orthogonal things. One thing is the text that you want to present. Another thing is the way you want to present your content. The colors, the fonts, the formatting, and so on. Okay? These are two separate concerns. Okay? Content and language. If you need to present content in the European language, it's one thing. You write from left to right. But if you need to present the same content in Arabic, you need to present it from right to left. So, it's a different story. Presentation and user agent. User agent means not just a browser, but could be a PDA or whatever. You know the browsers behave differently, so the same instruction, the same formatting instruction may have different outcomes using different browsers. And so you need to say, okay, I want this presentation in this way, but if the user agent is this one, then I need to do something different. Okay? So basically you're saying, whenever my user agent is a Safari, I want to do this. Otherwise, I want to do that. Okay? And that's, again, orthogonal to the concept of content. Business logic is orthogonal to authentication. And there are many, many, many different concerns in web applications, which are not just part of the primary function of the composition of our application. Okay? Thing is, since you cannot use an AOP framework in your web development, probably, we need to come up with different solutions. And it's possible, because in fact, there are two ways to achieve object-oriented programming. One is you use an aspect-oriented programming language, like AspectJ, or you use techniques like interception filters, you use configuration files for the declarative part, and so on and so on and so on. So, what I want to do in this presentation, in the next 45 minutes more or less, is just to give you an idea of different solutions that you may want to use in your architectures, in your design. So let me start with something provocative. You guys know what this piece of code is, right? It's a piece of CSS code, cascading style sheet. Okay? And basically what I'm saying here is whenever, you see the word again, whenever, okay, in the structure of my document, there is an item and an element called context menu item, which under a certain number of levels has a unsigned, an ordered list. Okay, so whenever this thing is true in the structure of my document, I want to apply this formatting advice. Okay, my point is this is in fact an aspect. We just don't think at CSS as a way to specify aspects, but this is in fact an aspect. Okay, it's declarative, it isolates common code, this one. Okay, and it's a way to say whenever. Okay. It's an aspect. Yep. I mean, that's my point. I may be wrong, but that's my point. So what I'm trying to say is, what I'm doing in this presentation is, I'm suggesting that we can still think in terms of aspect-oriented programming. And thinking in that terms, those terms will help you create a better design, even if you don't use an aspect-oriented programming language or framework. Okay, that's my point. Okay, just train your mind to see aspects where you wouldn't think there is an aspect, like in this case. Okay, that's what I'm trying to do. This is kind of a weaker example of aspect, which is a part of the configuration file. This is a snippet from a WebXML deployment descriptor. Okay? And what I'm saying here is, whenever, you see the word again, whenever we receive an exception of this type, I want the user to see this page. Whenever. Okay? Again. I think this is a more elegant example of an aspect, but still, okay? So this is, that's easy as far as you use configuration files. You use declarative languages like XML, CSS, and so on. But thing is, you also need to be able to implement the concept of aspect-oriented programming in your Java code, which means using an imperative language. And if you think about it, there are a few design patterns which are very popular, very common in web applications. One is proxy, one is template method, and one is chain of responsibility. Okay. In case you guys are not familiar with the design patterns. Proxy is saying, we use proxy to provide a surrogate or a placeholder for another object to control access to it. Proxy is a pattern that you find everywhere. Okay, it's a very pervasive pattern because it's very simple. And the simpler the pattern, the more frequently you find it in your code. Okay, so it's a very pervasive pattern. An example of proxy in web applications are Java filters. Okay, that's in fact a proxy. You guys, well, I'll give you an example of what a filter is later. Template method, that's another pattern, which is basically what we use to, like in the description, define the schedule of an algorithm and let subclasses redefine certain steps. Okay? So you have, again, a primary function with a composition. You want to do step A, step B, step C, but the way these steps are implemented depends upon the subclasses. Okay, so you can replace certain steps, but you maintain the same structure, the same algorithm. Template method is very common when you use an application server. Because in fact, whenever you write a servlet, for example, you are in fact using template method. Because you are writing code that you are not going to call, because that's part that code that you write implements certain interfaces, and it's the application server that has the template method that knows when to call into your code. Okay? But the general algorithm, for example, the servlet lifecycle, service and then destroy. Call init, call service, call destroy, that's part of an algorithm which is built into the application server. And you just provide implementation for these steps. Okay, so that's another pattern which is very pervasive. And chain responsibility. I'll give you an example of chain responsibility. So, how are we doing so far? You guys okay? You are too quiet. You're scared. Questions so far? No? Okay. Is it too hot in here? No? It's a window open, but I don't want you guys to. Okay. I have a few examples that I'd like to show you. One is an example of filter. Okay. Let's see. What do we need here? Not yours. That's a filter. Okay. Are you guys familiar with the concept of Java filters in web applications? Mm-hmm. Have you used filters before? You know what a filter is? Okay. Okay. Good. Excellent. So we don't need to go into the basics. In this case, it's just a. It's not very, very interesting. It's just an opportunity for me to show you what a filter is. But a filter is, in fact, an incarnation of the proxy design pattern. Because what the filter is doing is it's pretending to be the final object that you want to send a request to. Right? The filter is basically interposing itself between the caller and the final servlet. And you can chain filters together. Now, what I'm telling to you is you can use filters to implement aspects. You can use different filters to implement different aspects. And since a filter is not just implemented in Java, but it's also configured. Let's go back here. What is now? A filter is something that you can remove or add into your application just changing the deployment descriptor. That means that you use a declarative language mixed with Java language to insert or remove aspects from your application. Okay. And depending on how complex the filter is, you can do very interesting things. Okay. You can also chain filters together. For example, like this one. One problem which I had a few times, some time ago, was that I had an issue with the Safari browser, which has a bug when it needs to parse XHTML files. Okay, so in this application, we use XHTML files, and it works perfectly with any browser except for Safari. Because they had a problem with parsing ampersands into XML. It was a very stupid bug, but it was there. So the problem is, we needed an aspect. We need to be able to say, whenever we need to do some kind of encoding, URL encoding for any browser except for Safari, we do it in the ordinary way. But whenever the browser is Safari, we need to do something different. Of course, what we did not want to do was to go into all of our Java code and find all the places where we would call into the function to do the encoding and then have a special case everywhere in our code. But we wanted to be able to isolate that aspect into a very specific portion. Okay? Don't replicate the code. So what we came up with was something like this. We created a filter. Oops, sorry, not this one, this one. We have another aspect extension. Custom enclosed filter. Okay. Filter. Filter, do filter. Here what we do is we retrieve the user agent header from the request. So whenever a request comes in, we try to find out which kind of user agent is, what kind of browser or whatever. Okay. And then what we came up doing was this. We wrapped a response object into a class that we designed. Let me show you the code. It's easier if you see the code, which is extension custom response. Okay. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this technique, but there is an interface, actually a class. The class is just a helper class. Okay. There is a helper class that you can use, and you can create your own response objects or request objects. It's a technique that we use all the time with filters, because we need to be able to process requests and responses when they flow inside of our application. So what we did is, we just created a class, which is derived from this one. This class is, in fact, implementing the same interface as HTTP response, okay? And it just provides standard implementation of the methods, and we just overwrote this method. We just overwrote the method which performs the actual encoding. So what happens is, a request comes in, our filter creates one of these wrappers, okay? And it tells the wrapper, hey, the user agent is this one. Okay, and then what we do is we take this response object that we created and we hand it to the rest of the application. The application doesn't know that it's using a wrapper, that it's using something custom. It's just calling encode URL, that method, as usual. Okay, so we don't replicate logic, but we just call this method. And here, we say that, okay, if the user agent contains the string Safari, then we do... This is just a simple example, okay? Two things. When I show code during presentations, I try to keep it as simple as possible. So in the code, you may see stupid things, okay? Like system out println, which you are never supposed to do in a real application, okay, in a real web application. But I didn't want to use a login facility just for this simple example. Okay? Again, this is not production code, okay? You don't use it at home. Okay? So this is not production code. And so I just want to transmit the concept. Okay. But that's one way of doing it. So what I'm telling you is, in my opinion, this is in fact an aspect. Because using this approach, proxy, filters, wrappers, and so on, what we have is the ability to insert or remove a special case for Safari from our application without touching the Java code. If I want a special case for Safari, I just change the WebXML and I inject this filter into the chain. Okay? If I don't want the special case anymore, I just remove the filter. Okay? I am not touching my primary functional decomposition. Okay? The business logic is not affected by this special case, and this is isolated in an external aspect, which is in fact implemented using a filter in this case. Okay? So it's a form of aspect-oriented programming without an aspect-oriented programming language. Okay? Once you are able to play with intersecting filters, there are many interesting things that you can do. Sometimes you don't even need to create your own filters. You can find very good ones on the web. For example, I use a library. Sometimes use a library called URL Rewrite. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It's very, very convenient, very powerful. It gives you, it is the same concept. Okay? It uses configuration files, it uses filters, and it gives you the ability to encode or rewrite every URL in your web application. Okay? Every URL which is generated by the application or that is received by the application. For example, let's see. If you want to use this library, URL Rewrite, what you need to do is let's remove this one, or just leave it. What you need to do, of course, is install the library, you need to change WebXML so you use their filter, so on. And this filter that you install is able to read configuration files like this. So what I'm saying in this case is, every time in my Java code or in my JSP, I encode a URL, I want this encoding to happen following this rule. And the rule is, if the user agent is Googlebot, Google, or the user agent is Safari, I want to take this regular expression and use it to remove the session ID from my URLs. Okay? Which makes sense if you think about it. Okay, when you have Google that is crawling your website and fetching the URL of your pages, Google is not accepting cookies. And since it's not accepting cookies, your application is sending, is encoding the JSession ID into the URL. But you don't want Google to consider the JSession ID as part of your URL. So you don't want to send the JSession ID to Google. That's a special case, it's an aspect. Okay? You're saying whenever the user agent is Google, I want to remove the session ID. You could do it going through all of your Java code and say if user agent is Google, then do this, or you use an aspect and you specify that in one single point in your application. So any questions so far? You guys are fine.
What about performance implications?
Thank you for this question. the short answer would be performance is a relative concept. And of course, I mean, you need to pay something. It's always the same story. You want to... you get more simplicity and you get a better design, which does not necessarily translate into performance. But my first answer would be, if you need a better performance, buy a more powerful hardware. And keep a good design in your application. Okay, so let's move on. Another form of using filters to do this kind of things is using a library called Sitemesh. You guys know Sitemesh? You do. You do. 3, 4. Okay. So less than 10%. CytoMesh is a very interesting library because let me show you what it is. So I'm just starting Tomcat. And what's in here? Okay, that's my web application. Okay, in this demo, that's what my web application is doing. You run it and you have a very simple page with three demos, customer code, business action, and one business action. You call this guy here, you have some kind of, and you can see here that the URL was encoded in such a way because it's a Safari encoded. But I'm using the filter that I showed you earlier, okay? If I use a different browser and I do the same thing, the encoding is different. So, if we go here, I'll go back, take this, copy, go to Firefox, paste, okay? And then I go to custom encode. You see that the URL is different because one is encoded for Safari, well, okay. But CytoMesh, something that will let you do something like this. I need to change something in my code to be able to show that to you. I want to delete this, delete it out. Just to be sure, I want to shut down my application server. I want to restart it. And then I want to go here and go back to the main page. Okay. Then I want to go to Safari and refresh. Okay. Now this is exactly the same application as before. Okay. I just changed one line in my deployment descriptor. Okay. And what CytoMesh is doing, it's applying presentation aspects. It's saying, oh, okay, so instead of having just welcome and so on, you want to have a header. And if the header, if the user agent is Mozilla, you want the header to look like this. And if the user agent is different, you want the header to look like that. Okay? And it's an aspect. You can edit and remove it, and that's not part of the business logic of my application. Okay? I don't want to go into the details of CytoMesh. It's a very interesting library. I also have a very interesting story about CytoMesh. I mean, I know the guy who wrote it. And it's very fun because a CytoMesh, of course, I need to tell you this. I mean, I'm sorry. I need to tell you this. No, I can't. We're going public. I forgot. I'll tell you later when the camera is off. It was something regarding the Department of Defense of the United States. So let's go back to business. So far so good, right? I think I stressed the idea of using filters to implement aspects strongly in us. Another thing we can do, although it's not as effective, is using template methods. Let me give you an example of what a template method may look like. I want to go back to the code here. Let me close this one, close. I want to open java.com and the one extensions. Struts. Okay. That's my business section. Oh, I'm using struts. You guys are familiar with struts. Okay. Very popular library for implementing a nice model view controller. Architecture in your application. So that's a classic example. I have an action, which is a piece of code which is invoked whenever my application receives a request for a specific URL. Okay? And in this case, my business logic could be this one. Okay? That's my business logic. Okay? Very simple business logic. Now, let's say that you have many of these classes, you have many pieces of business logic, and you want something to happen before the business logic and after the business logic, in the same way as you've seen in the AspectJ example before, okay? Where you have the point cut and after the point cut and before the point cut, Okay? You want to be able to do the same thing for every single action which you have. A common technique is to use a template method, which means that basically you create a class more or less like this. This is a custom action. You implement your execute method here. You have pre-process, a local call, and then post-process. Now, pre-process and post-process, in this case, they just print something. Okay? But these would be pieces of common code that you want to isolate in one single point. Okay? And this method here, local execute, as you can see, is abstract, so it's redefined by subclasses. So whenever you use, you derive your actions from this class, you automatically get code which is executed before and after, before and after your primary business logic. Okay? This code is trivial here, but it could be a bit more sophisticated and decide what to do depending on external configuration files. So if you want to change this logic, like Sitemesh or like URLwrite, the libraries we just showed to you, okay? So if you want to change something, you change the external configuration files, and you don't even need to recompile. Okay? That's another simple example. And in fact, you can see this thing working here. Let me clear a terminal window. I want to go here. Any of these guys? No, let's take Safari. Let's take Firefox. I want to go here, and I want to click on business action. And you see I have pre-processing, which comes from the main class. I have my business logic, which is for the specific action, and then post-processing, which comes again from the base class. Okay? That's another way of doing it. And there are many circumstances where you can do this. And then we have chain of responsibility. Now, chain of responsibility is a design pattern that we use whenever we want to decouple the code which sends a message, or as we say in Java, the code that calls a method. We want to decouple the caller. We want to decouple the caller from the actual method which is invoked. Okay. The idea is, are you guys familiar with chain of responsibility? So just to be sure. We have a piece of code. Okay. What? It's beautiful. We have a piece of code which at some point needs to call into some method provided by some object. Okay. This is the object and this is the method I want to call. Chain responsibility is when you create, when you design your application in such a way that this object may decide if it wants to actually provide implementation of this method and then return a result, or just delegate to another object which provides the same method. And then maybe this guy delegates to another one which implements the same method. Okay, this is what we call chain of responsibility. Okay? Because each one of these guys may be the one who is responsible to generate the actual response. Okay? But you don't know which one. And the interesting thing is that this chain should be easily configurable. You should be able to remove or insert links into this chain in an easy way. Okay? Chain responsibility is very common in user interfaces. When, for example, you click with the mouse on a window, and the window decides that, you know, I don't really want to deal with this event, so I will delegate to the containing window, and so on, and so on, and so on, until eventually there is a piece of user interface which decides to handle that event, or maybe not. Okay? But the way these things are connected together is a chain of responsibility. Now, if you think at each of these links as an aspect, okay. Again, you have a primary functional composition which can do different things. Close this. And the example I would like to give to you is using a facility in the Java actually a facility provided by the Apache Commons Chain. Are you guys familiar with this thing? Commons Chain? Yeah. It's very interesting. I like Commons Chain. Let me show you what it does. What you can do is something like this. Let's go over here. Let's close this, close this one. Let's open a new one. So, struts, command. I want to open this two guys. This one. And I want to open the other one. Command B. Okay? So, these two classes are very similar. Okay? Command A and Command B. Because again, I wanted to keep the example simple. The thing is, these are two different commands. And a command is something, is one of those links in the chain of responsibility which I showed to you. Okay? So you see that the interface is the same. They all implement the same method. They have a consistent interface. Execute, public, boolean, they take the same input arguments and so on. They have the same interface. And since they have the same interface, they are interchangeable. Okay? You can use one or the other. Now, thing is, using Apache Commons Chain, you can create a catalog of commands. And you create a catalog of commands just by, guess what? An XML file, of course. Now, where did they put this? That's a good question. Sorry, I forgot where I put this stuff. But it must be somewhere. So let's go back here. Let's see if this is easier. Oh, webinf classes conf. Yeah, of course. Webinf classes. Commons conf commands. Okay. So you write these classes, okay? You implement different commands. Okay? Each command does put something completely different from the other. Then you create a catalog of commands. Okay? That's the name of the catalog. You see that it contains one command called command 1, which is implemented by this class, and command 2 implemented by the other class. B command, A command. You can also create a composite command. You can create a chain, you can define not one single command, but you can specify that a group of commands all together is to be considered as one single command. Okay? So here I'm saying, I want to create a chain made up with these two commands. Okay? And this thing you can use in your struts configuration file. So, for example, here, this one is called more business action. What I'm saying is, my struts action is implemented by this class. Okay? And this action is using this command from this catalog. Now, what happens is, the way struts is designed is that before that action is invoked, your commands are executed as well. Okay? And since which command you want to execute, in which order, and which chain you want to use is completely configurable using the external XML files, you can insert or remove aspects from your business logic just inserting or removing commands from your application. Okay? Let me give you an example. My class, let's go back to code, struts. This is the action which is called more business action. Okay? Very simple. Now, again, just pretend that the highlighted line is your whole business logic. Okay, so it may be very complex. Okay? Thing is, this is my primary business logic. And when I call into this action, let me show you what happens. Okay, just clean this and go here, call more business action. You see, I have command A and command B. These are called because of the Apache chain facility. Then I have pre-process, which comes from the template method. Eventually, I have my business logic, and then I have post-process, which comes from the business, from the template method. Let me tell you one thing about aspect-oriented programming. One thing that which I came to realize: some people like it, some people don't. Okay, and it depends largely on the way you like to think at your code. Some people like to think at their code as stories. So they like to see everything happening from the beginning of the method to the end of the method. Some people get very confused when they see that there are 5 method calls here, and just this one is part of my primary class, and the other ones, I don't know where they come from. Okay? Some people get very annoyed, because they would like to see in their execute method, in structs, they would like to see all these 5 method calls, like a story, which start from start to the end. Okay, and this is common, that's part of the way these guys think. And to tell you the truth, there are circumstances where this approach is actually very effective, especially with unit testing. Because every single test must be a story. Whoever writes the test or reads the test needs to be able to understand the test from start to the end. Okay? So in that case, just following through this story, it's fine. And you don't care if you have 100 tests and they are all designed using copy and paste, so they look all the same, except for a few lines here, a few lines there. You don't care. Because every test is a story. Okay? But if you apply the same principle to production code, what you don't want to have is 100 methods which look all the same except for 2 lines here and there. Okay? So that's why I'm saying, even though aspect-oriented programming may be confusing sometimes at first, you know, it's like polymorphism. Remember what people used to say 15 years ago when they looked at object-oriented programming for the first time? And we used to tell them, oh yes, you know, you call into this method, but you don't really know which implementation is going to be called, because it depends on the actual implementation class. It could be this one or this one, depends on the type of the object. No polymorphism. And these guys were extremely confused and annoyed. What do you mean I don't know which implementation is called? I want to know exactly what is going to be called. Okay? But then we got used to polymorphism, and they realized that maybe it's not such a good idea. Okay. So it's more or less the same story. I think I have 10 more minutes. Okay. You guys are still awake, right? Can you need coffee, anything? Can I order something for you? That'll be fine. Okay. Just say. Last thing I want to talk about is another approach, which is event handling. Another thing that people tend to forget when they write web applications in Java is that the application server provides you with a very interesting and very effective event handling facility. So basically, for almost everything that happens in the application server, you get a notification. But people just tend to forget that for some reason. Okay. So for example, you have notifications which are sent to you whenever a context is created, whenever the application starts or terminates, when you change the attribute of the context, when you change the attribute of a session, when a session is created, when it's destroyed, when it's passivated, and so on, so on, so on. You have tens of events. When an object is bound to a session, and so on, and so on, and so on. You have events which are generated whenever a request is created or destroyed, whenever a response is created or destroyed. Okay? And all these events, you can actually intercept and use them to apply, again, aspects to your application, to isolate common code into event listeners, instead of duplicating the code everywhere. So, for example, I have one here, I guess. maybe, sometimes. But I need to do something first. I need to uncomment a few lines from here. Oops. Okay, let's leave by hand. This is also an opportunity to explain what I'm doing. Okay. If you want to be able to intercept events in your web application, you need to set up event listeners. Okay. And an event listener is just a class that you write that must implement specific interfaces or a specific interface, and then what you do is you register the listener in your deployment descriptor. Okay. That's what you do. So I created two listeners here. One is a listener which I use to monitor what the context, the application, is created and destroyed. And the other one is a listener which I use to monitor whenever every single request is created or destroyed. Okay. In case you want to see the code for this thing, in the meantime I'm going to shut down the application server, start application server, and so on. The code is here. I'll just show the custom request is this one. Okay. It's just a class which must implement a specific interface, and whenever a request is created, initialized, or destroyed, okay, you get your methods are called. Okay. Just a listener. Did I restart the application server? Not yet. So let's restart it. You see this thing here, which appeared for a second, and I lost it. Initializing context somewhere. Oh, this one. Okay. This is one of my listeners. Okay. And now, every time a request is received, like Morbius section, request resource for this URL, this is my listener. Okay. It's this code here, which is printing out requested resource and then what was requested, the URL that was requested. Okay. So, requested resource, command A, command B, processing more actions, and so on and so on. This is my actual business logic. Everything else that you see here is implemented in one single place, but is applied every time I call that piece of business logic or other pieces of business logic. Okay? So, no code replication, and so on and so on. So, that's the story, more or less. Let's put it here. So if I had to summarize what I've been talking about is I've been talking about ways to say whatever ways to isolate code that represents things that must happen whenever certain situations happen. Okay. So we've been talking about using libraries, not pre-built libraries like Sitemesh or URL Rewrite. We have been talking about CSS as a form of aspect-oriented programming. We have been talking about intersecting filters, proxies, and so on, using template methods, using chain of responsibility, which you can do by yourself, or you can use the Apache Commons chain, which works without struts, by the way. If you want to use Commons chain, you don't need struts. You can use it per se. Okay. We have been talking about event handling. And in general, I've been trying to tell you, if you remember that it's very hard, it's very unlikely that your application has only one primary functional decomposition. It's much more likely that you have one primary functional decomposition and then many intersecting concerns, and you want to be able to isolate those concerns without code replication, the aspect-oriented principles are designed exactly for this purpose. And even if you do not use an aspect-oriented programming framework, you can still do aspect-oriented programming. Okay? So that was my point, and I think that's all for now. Okay? So thank you. Thank you.
You have mentioned testing, unit testing, as an example where you probably wouldn't use AOP principles. I can imagine that it could possibly benefit from it too. What do you think?
I'm sorry, could benefit?
Benefit from AOP principles as well to reduce duplicated code.
You mean unit testing?
Yeah, I mean set of your unit tests.
It's up to you. Thank you for your question. I think that it depends on the way that you like to write tests. If you are the kind of person who prefer to have to set up everything for all tests first and then just specify the minimum logic for each test, then maybe aspect-oriented programming or any way of isolating common code in one single place is a good thing for you. If you are the kind of person, because very often, you know, what happens, especially in large organizations, is that people who write the tests are not necessarily the people who implement the application. And so for them, it's much easier to be able to receive a specification of what the application is supposed to do with a certain use case, and they translate the use case into code. And in that case, following the code is more or less like following the description of the use case. And for in this case, it's better for them that every single test is a story, it's a use case. So it depends.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
You showed that you can integrate Apache Chain with struts. How would you do it outside of struts? Because in the example you've been showing, you had to edit the strut XML, and there were two special attributes.
There is an API that you can use that comes with Commons Chain, and using that API, you can invoke any chain or any command which is specified in the Commons Chain XML file.
So, for instance, if I would use JSF, I have to do everything myself, basically, or is there any integration?
I think so. There is no. I'm not sure about this.
Which kind of aspect viewing do you prefer? I mean, in aspect gen. It's proxy mode or runtime compilation or something like it.
Which kind of aspect?
Viewing. It's warehouse aspect injected into code.
Oh, which is my preferred style?
Yeah.
I don't have a preferred style. I work with whatever I'm available to. It depends on the project. You know, sometimes you just can use something, and sometimes you cannot. I just use the best tool that I can use. I don't have a preference. Of course, I mean, AspectJ is much more elegant. And if you are really into aspect-oriented programming, you really want to see it that way, it's much easier to do that in AspectJ rather than creating your own approach. But sometimes you just can't. And so I'm very pragmatic. You know, I use whatever I can use. Other questions? I have a question for you guys. Did you find something that you can reasonably apply into your everyday development in this presentation? Did you find something, some inspiration? Was it useful? Okay, good. Just wanted to check. It's a new presentation. I gave it just once in December in Krakow, and I need your feedback to make it better for the next time. So if you have any suggestion, even by email.
May I have a question? I wanted to ask you, do you have any experience with maintainability and the cost of maintenance of applications which were developed in aspect-oriented way and in normal way?
No. I don't have any benchmark. I mean, I have a gut feeling, but nothing scientific. I'm sorry. I would suspect that. I see your point. I think that what you're saying, what you're asking is, isn't there the risk that using this approach, our teams get so confused because they don't know where to find what, that maintenance becomes more complex than having code replicated in different parts of the application. Is that your concern?
Not only because reusability can help to better maintenance and lower the maintenance costs, and this basically means to reuse the code many times.
Exactly. The problem with code duplication is that it increases the cost of maintenance, because every time you duplicate something, you need to maintain it twice. And which is why I stressed this idea of isolating common code so much. On the other hand, as I was saying before, some people get very confused and very annoyed when they see code scattered here and there. And they don't see the way this code gets together. Probably good tools would be very helpful in this case. For example, graphical tools that could help people see how the different pieces of code are actually woven together, they are connected together. For example, reading the configuration files, you can see that the command is called before the action. Okay, just reading the configuration, just parsing the configuration file. But we don't have those tools, so it's more complicated.